This is Ron Stevens. Welcome to Python 411, Computer Programming for Everybody. It's a real pleasure to have with me the two authors of WXPython in Action, the recent book by Robin Dunn and Noel Rappin. And welcome, guys.
Hi.
It's good to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, this book, I wrote a review of this on my website, and I even got it, my review even got put up on Slashdot.
It did indeed.
Yeah. So this book helped me understand GUI programming a lot. Now, I'm still not by any means an expert programmer when it comes to GUIs, but I've been trying to program GUIs for about 6 years now, and when I started out, I really didn't know anything about object-oriented programming, and I tried to learn object-oriented programming and Python and GUI programming with Tkinter all at once, and it was very difficult. But this book has finally given me the ability to do the kind of GUIs that I like to do, so it's very, very clear.
That's what we like to hear about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly what we were going for. So
I'm sure most of you know this, but Robin Dunn actually is the creator of WXPython and must have something like 1,000, maybe 1,000,000 hours of invested time, Robin. Any way to estimate that?
Not a clue. It's been a long time.
I don't even think 1,000 even covers the amount of time Robin spent just on the mailing list.
Yeah. And then the book, no doubt. How long did it take you to write the book?
Way too long.
Yeah. I know a few book authors have told me that if they calculated how much they made per hour on the work they did writing a book, they would be way below minimum wage. Probably.
Yeah, you don't want to calculate that. That's just it's not a road you want to walk down.
It's a labor of love, I think, and it really shows. WXPython. I think a few years ago when I first joined the community, I read from Guido von Rossum that he felt this was the best toolkit. And I guess Tkinter is left in the system for legacy reasons, but I think it's definitely the number one toolkit these days. Wouldn't you say so, Noel?
I think it's certainly the most powerful, the most up-to-date, the easiest, the most flexible cross-platform. It's got the most widgets, the most ongoing development. I think it's the place to be if you're going to be doing GUI programming in Python. So
right, compared to Tkinter, it's just it looks more native on Windows or the Mac or Linux, it's a much more powerful toolkit with a lot more widgets. Tell us a little bit about your background before we get started, Robin. How did you get into programming and then into Python and then into WXPython?
I was in junior high way back in the many decades ago, and my dad brought home a TRS-80, and he's been involved with computers since the dawn of time, practically. But he brought home this TRS-80 from Radio Shack and a book on basic programming, and the only way I could play any games on the computer was if I typed in the source code for the game myself.
Right. A lot of people have that kind of experience.
Yeah.
And since the book was actually written for a different model of TRS-80, I also had to understand the code enough to port it to that model. And I think that was the key for me.
Was that in BASIC?
Yep, BASIC.
Good old BASIC.
Yeah.
And then from there, what did you do?
From there, I self-taught myself basics, taught myself Pascal, taught myself C, and was always a little bit ahead of the curve as far as what educational opportunities were available for me then. When I went to college, I actually registered as an electrical engineering major because I figured that software development was just a fun hobby. But, it wasn't what I wanted to do. But within a couple of semesters, I switched over to computer science as my major and went from there. I've worked for very large international companies. I've worked for very small, tiny startups and have done a lot of different types of work in different environments.
And how did you get into Python and WXPython?
I got into Python kind of in a roundabout way. I was working for a telecommunications company. We were launching a new project and needed a GUI toolkit for C++ for HP UX environments. And so I was looking for toolkits that were available, and then my boss decided that he wanted to show a prototype of what our user interface was going to be running on his Windows machine at a trade show. And so I started looking for cross-platform toolkits for C++, and I ran into WX Widgets. And liked what I saw and played with it a little bit. And then on the website, somebody had mentioned or had put a link to a Python wrapper for WX Widgets. And I didn't know what Python was at that point in time. I went and looked at it and clicked on a few links and ended up on the Python homepage, read through the tutorial, and within a few hours I had basically learned enough about a new language to be productive in it and loving it.
How long ago was that when you worked?
That was in 96 or 97.
Yeah.
And the Python wrappers that were there at that time were really simple, completely handwritten, and didn't cover a whole lot of functionality. And so I worked on that a little bit to kind of bring it up to the point where we could write our prototype using it, and then kind of got sidetracked, and that version of the Python wrappers for WX Widgets kind of faded away and didn't really go anywhere. And a couple years later, I decided I wanted to kind of get back into that. I enjoyed working on it and had been, in the meantime, had changed jobs and had been doing a web-based application with Python and kind of missed the GUI stuff.
Yeah.
And so went back to it and pretty much started from scratch, and that's by the end of 97 or early 98, had the first version that was out there and started to be used by people.
Yep, the rest is history, as they say.
Yep.
I think the work speaks for itself, the point it's at now. Noel, could you tell us a little about your background and how you got into programming and then Python and WX Python?
Yeah, sure. Some of it's a little bit similar. I think that a lot of people have pretty similar stories. I also started not at home, but when I was, 10 or something like that, took a after-school class that taught BASIC on a sort of motley collection of TRS-80s and Texas Instruments and Apple II Pluses and whatever. Somehow really took to it, and eventually went on to, go through Python and then, not Python, sorry, Pascal. Pascal was the language they were trying to, teach everybody at the
I remember those days. In the university, right. It was the big thing.
And eventually wound up majoring in computer science and then going on to graduate school using a bunch of different language tools, and eventually coming to Python as a looking for a tool that would just let me get stuff done, and coming to Python and WX Python for a job that I was doing, where we were building a small application with a small GUI, and WX Python and Python fit it perfectly. Since then, have done a variety of different things: web apps, standard client apps, Java, Python, Ruby, like ColdFusion, a variety of different web app tools, and all kinds of stuff.
Okay. You've also written books before, Noel?
I co-authored the book Jython Essentials,
which was
obviously about Jython, and I actually have a couple of chapters of books and articles floating around in various places.
Yeah, I actually have a copy of that Jython Essentials, and I really enjoy playing around with Jython, and that book helped me a lot. It's neat that you can use Python anywhere there's a Java virtual machine.
Yeah, the whole idea of having multiple languages target the Java virtual machine is really powerful, and Jython is probably the furthest along in terms of, at least at one point it was the first along. It probably still has the largest audience, although there's certainly any number of contenders in that space right now, and Sun has just put their weight behind. Well, Sun has just hired the guys who do the JRuby port, which is similar.
Yeah, I saw that. And, of course, Jim Hagunen works for Microsoft now.
Jim Hagunen works for Microsoft, where he does the .NET, IronPython.net.
Which just was released in the 1.0 version, so that's kind of neat. So this book, obviously you put a lot of effort into it, and I think if there's one, if there has been one criticism on in the community, not a criticism really, but if there was one thing that people wished there was that was improved, it was the documentation on WXPython. I think the documentation actually was pretty good myself. I mean, I was able to use it based on what was available on the web, but there was this longing for better documentation, and I think this book really answers that and definitively. Now I think it would be hard to imagine much better documentation for anyone who really wants to use this toolkit. This book pretty much goes from the very beginning and goes into quite some detail on things, including rather advanced topics, like there's a small section on threading, how to do GUI programs with threads, and things like that. So it really is a milestone in the history of WXPython, I think.
Definitely.
I think, yeah, it was important to us, at least to me, to try to address the documentation. I mean, I had heard certainly those criticisms of the documentation. I had even made some of those criticisms.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that it was clearly something that was felt as holding the tool back in terms of adoption, and definitely was something in my head as we were structuring the book and trying to figure out what would be in it and what would not be in it, was to think about what it was like, you know, for me four or five years ago, starting on that WXPython project and thinking what would have been, you know, what information would have been really nice to know up front, you know, what references would it have been good to have at hand, and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
that was a really good perspective, because for me, having never really, you know, been the newbie with WXPython, I had to just kind of glean some of those ideas from what other people were complaining about or what they had trouble with and things like that. But having Noel be, you know, being able to, you know, play that role of, you know, what's it like to have to learn something like this toolkit, it really helped a lot.
Yeah, that's for sure. I guess I'll address this question to you, Robin. What do you see in the future for WXPython? It's pretty mature now, isn't it? I mean, there's not a whole lot that it's hard for me to envision what you would do next, almost.
I don't think there'll be a whole, you know, any, you know, major advancements or breakthroughs, but more of a constant evolution,
right?
Where incremental improvements as the toolkits evolve, then WX will evolve to match that. You know, I'd like to get some more complete coverage. There's some widgets that aren't wrapped. There's some abilities that you know, could be, have some of the rough edges smoothed out a little bit. Things along those lines.
What about Python 2.5, which was just released? Is there anything there that needs to be updated in terms of WXPython, or is it pretty much compatible as is?
It's compatible as is. I've had to make very few source code changes to build with Python 2.5, but you know, by and large, it just worked.
Right. It might be a little bit more of a challenge with Python 3.0 or 3000.
Yeah, there'll probably be some you know, API changes that will affect WXPython's extension modules and perhaps language changes as well. But again, it'll probably be more along the lines of incremental changes rather than, you know, major rewrites or anything.
Do you have any idea how many people use WXPython?
Yeah, I've tried to estimate that at various times, and you know, there's on the various mail lists, there's probably close to about 1,000 people that are subscribed. But, you know,
that's very active users, usually. The mail list.
Right,
That's what I was going to say. There's a lot of indications that that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
We average between 30,000 and 50,000 downloads per month.
Wow.
and that's, you know, that's a fairly consistent rate. There's not, you know, there's minor fluctuations when there's new releases, but not as much as you would expect if everybody's just downloading the new release and that's it.
That's more than I would have thought. You know, I would guess that based on that number of monthly downloads, that the total number of users must be over 100,000, surely.
You know, it's again, it's hard to say because there's multiple files that, you know, for each release, and so individual people might be downloading, you know, different versions for different platforms or the Unicode versus ANSI release builds or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's an aggregate of all downloads. And so, again, it's still really hard to tell. And then there's, you know, WX Python's included with Apple OS X and OS X.
Right. Right.
And it's included with a number of Linux distributions.
Yeah.
You know, it may not be in the core install now, but it's available in their repositories, and so some applications would have dependencies on it. And so, yeah, it's really truly hard to really even estimate.
How popular is the WX Windows package for other languages? That's something I have no idea about myself.
I actually researched a lot of the other bindings because I did an article that should be popping up on IBM Developer Works.
Okay, well,
about a number of the different bindings, and
right.
None of them are anywhere near as far along as WX Python. I mean, it's just, you know, it's head and shoulders in terms of the maturity level. Most of the other ones are things where people put some time into it, got it mostly to work. It does some interesting things, and then, you know, kind of development sort of stalled. So I don't think that my impression was, and I'm sort of remembering this at a little bit of a distance, was that there weren't too many other languages aside from the main, you know, C++ version.
Yeah.
That had any sort of critical mass.
There is a book I saw in a bookstore.
Yeah.
For C++, the original version, I guess.
But the basic bindings. I mean, you know, SWG gives you a leg up on doing bindings for a bunch of different languages, and I looked at the Perl version and the Ruby version and the JavaScript version, I think there's one or two others.
There's Eiffel and
Eiffel, but I didn't look at the Eiffel.
There's another language I'd never heard of before.
Lua or something like that.
Lua.
I actually managed to create sample working code in two or three of them, but they were all.
I think Lua is a scripting language with a very sparse syntax. Is that right, Noel?
Yeah, and it's typically used as an embedded macro language for an application,
like games or something. I guess if there are in my impression, tkinter, I never know if you pronounce it tkinter or tkinter, but
I've heard it both ways.
Okay, well, I used that before I used WX Python, and, you know, it's a nice toolkit, and I think it's good that it's still around because there's a lot of programs written in that, so for legacy purposes. But I guess of the more modern or the more complete toolkits, other than WX Python, the most popular might be PyQt and PyGTK.
Yeah.
Could you compare, Robin, this WX Python to those two,
I haven't really used either of them, and so I really couldn't say.
Okay.
And as for the book, we deliberately did not want to get into a my toolkit is better than your
toolkit. Yeah, that's
kind of a shouting match. I think we just wanted to present what was good about this toolkit.
I will say, however, that WX Python exists because I couldn't wrap my brain around tkinter.
Yeah, a lot of people have said something like that, yeah.
Yeah, even though, you know, Python fits your brain, tkinter doesn't.
Right.
Say that about WX Python and say that they love tkinter, but in my experience and in most of the WX Python's users' experiences, it's the other way around. They have troubles. Even if you leave aside, you know, the breadth and depth of the widgets that are available, tkinter just, for me at least, I can't speak for everybody, but for me at least, it just didn't fit.
Also, the GUIs written with Tkanter definitely don't look native on any platform, really, because you can tell instantly they were created with Tkanter, I think.
Yeah.
Could you tell us, Robin, some of the major, some of the programs written using WXPython that people might recognize off the top of their heads, so to speak?
Oh.
It's a trick question. I didn't. There's one I'm thinking of myself, but I can't think of the name. It's a personal organizer, Chandler.
Chandler, yeah. That's the main one that people will be aware of, and it's from the Open Source Applications Foundation. There's there's a lot of people are doing in-house things that they will use within their business. There's a few people that are creating utilities for themselves or database front ends for themselves. And there's a few others that people are releasing, but you don't really even know that they're written in WXPython or even Python because, you know, from the user's perspective, it looks just like a regular application for their platform.
Which is one of the beauties of WXPython. Right. Yeah.
I mean, certainly in the case of Chandler, as I recall, and I think, Robin, you would almost certainly know more about this than I do, but you know, for Chandler, they picked WXPython specifically because they felt it would give them the best cross-platform ease of development experience.
Exactly.
You know, and they were starting from scratch. So.
Yeah, and this was I think this is led by the guy who created VisiCalc or something.
Lotus.
Lotus. What? Lotus 1-2-3.
Mitch Kapoor, was founder of Lotus, wrote 1-2-3 and Agenda and several other, primarily involved in several of the other Lotus tools. And his baby.
I've downloaded and used it, and it's quite a nice app. It's still not, released the production release yet, but it's also an open source project that people can contribute to, so.
Yep.
Might be worth checking out.
Yeah. Robin, you've worked for them, haven't you?
Yes, actually, they're sponsoring my work on WXPython.
I didn't realize that, but that's an added benefit. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I they pay me for about half my time to work on WXPython and about half my time to assist them with Chandler or with other WX-related needs that they have.
Well, I definitely recommend folks check that out. It's Chandler, so you can Google for it and check it out.
Yeah, and it's... Open Source Applications Foundation.
Right.
.org.
Yeah, very, very,
.org.
Very important project, I think. Also, I'm aware that a lot of people have created toolkits using WXPython, such as Boa Constructor, which I'm not a big fan of, but Python Card I am a big fan of, and there's also something called WX Glade, but Python Card in particular is a way for people to make to draw GUIs point and click style, and then you can also then go in and work on the code, of course, on the command line. And I think it's a nice project. It's probably not for use on major production jobs, but for quick and dirty GUIs, it's kind of nice.
And it's good for people that are just learning too.
Yeah, it certainly helped me in that respect.
There's definitely a lot of space to make all kinds of GUI programs simpler. GUI programming simpler.
Right.
Yep.
And then my one of my online friends, Hans Nowak, he created something called WAX, which is, I don't know what you'd call it. It sort of sits on top of WXPython and tries to make it more Pythonic in certain ways.
Right. There's a few tools like that. I call them Pythonification layers. There's a big word to twist.
Right. Okay. Pythonification layers.
There's also one called Davo that's got a lot of momentum right now. We're primarily looking to do a toolkit for creating multi-tier database applications, but their user interface layer has got quite popular with WXPython developers.
Is that mainly for? I haven't used it, but it works with database as well, I guess.
Yeah, the database components, but you can use the UI layer independently. They've got a GUI designer, a report designer. Things like that.
Yeah, some of the guys, I met some guys at PyCon in Dallas last February who, some of the Pythonistas from the Dallas area who were very excited about that. And right, by the way, are either of you going to be in Dallas next February for the PyCon 2007?
I haven't decided yet.
Well, if you do, it'd be nice to meet you.
Yep.
What about if you were talking to relatively new learners of WX Python, but serious students of the subject? What sort of advice would you give them, other than buying the book, which is pretty obvious? I'll start with you, Noel. What obviously, you've learned GUI programming in many languages, so what would be your advice to these folks?
I think that the biggest place that I see, you know, a programmer get in trouble in doing a GUI program is just intertangling stuff, putting the logic and the GUI stuff together, which will get you in trouble eventually when you need to move things around. You know, it's very important to keep
it separate.
It doesn't actually have to be the MVC model view control pattern, but you want to do something similar. You want to have your data and your GUI know as little bit about each other as possible.
And that's something you go into in detail in your book, the model view control. In fact, I read one reviewer who actually, that was his one criticism almost. He thought, geez, there's a whole lot of material on model view controller in the beginning of the book that isn't necessarily about WX Python, but I mm-hmm. found that to be extra useful.
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting that you say that, because it was something that was important to me to put in the outline of the book pretty high up, that we were not just talking about the reference material of how to write WX Python, but that we really wanted to talk about how to write good WX Python programs for a little bit. So we wanted to talk about MVC, and we wanted to talk about refactoring, we wanted to talk about testing, and even through, since it was in an early chapter, it went through, you know, all of our rounds of internal review, and even through the internal review, we would get people who would say, this chapter is really was incredibly helpful and was giving me a whole new perspective and was very useful. And we would also get people who would say, what is this chapter doing in here? All this stuff.
It might be that, well, for me it was very useful. And I suppose if someone already knew all of that stuff dead cold, all they'd have to do is skip the chapter if that's. But I know I was participating in a discussion forum on Ars Technica that I happened to belong to recently. And some folks were asking, you know, what is a good book and what's a good way to learn GUI programming? And I recommended WX Python in Action. And that was a selling point that I used, was that, you know, it really does teach you about GUI programming in general before it dives into the gory details of WX Python. And I think a lot of people see that as an advantage. So, and it's something that you don't see in many books on this subject, probably. So, Robin, what would be your advice to someone, a serious student, learning in the early stages of learning WX Python and GUI programming?
My advice would be to learn the capabilities of the toolkit and how to use it before becoming reliant on a GUI builder tool.
Right.
Because I see a lot of people that will just jump into using Boa Constructor or some similar tool that lets them just do a quick and dirty layout of a form and put a little code behind it. But then they eventually get to the point where they want to do something that maybe the tool doesn't make easy for them to do, or that they run into a wall. And then they get stuck, they get frustrated, because they don't know, you know, how to use the code or how to use the toolkit by itself. I know that there's definitely a place for GUI builder tools, and I use them now and then myself. But even before I started working with WX Python, I always tried to avoid becoming reliant on them, because I knew that there would always be a brick wall I'd run into eventually.
And that's common advice of people who are experienced and successful at GUI programming. I know I've read that advice on the Python News Group several times, and I also know if you look at like generated code by Boa Constructor, it's a real mess. So you won't learn anything by looking at it. Maybe you'll learn bad things, if anything. So
right, and it becomes very hard to maintain, and it ties you to the specific tool, which can be difficult if you're on a team.
Very true.
And you can't convince everybody to use the same tool. So, you know.
What about in general, what IDE do each of you use? Noel, just Do you just use a text editor, or do you use something more capable?
It's a little bit language specific, and what operating system I have to be on. For Python on Mac, I use TextMate, which is a not open source but relatively inexpensive text editor that's got a lot of nice features. On the Mac, on Windows for Python, I tend to use JEdit. I just haven't had really fantastic experiences with any of the more elaborate Python IDEs.
That's common. I usually use a text editor myself, to be honest, although I do also use a little bit. I've been using SPE, Stanny's Personal Editor. Mm-hmm. But there's a learning curve involved with any extensive IDE also. Sometimes that gets
SPE is written by with WXPython, by the way.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons I like it. And it also, I haven't used it, but there's a connection. You can use WXGlade with it also.
Yep.
But what about you, Robin? What do you use personally?
Primarily, since I'm on pretty much multiple platforms multiple times a day, pretty much a requirement for me is to have the same editor available on all the platforms. Just so I don't have to shift gears so much.
Right.
And so I use Emacs everywhere.
Yep.
And also, since I'm often switching between C++ and Python with my work and going back and forth multiple times, some of the Python specific editors like Wing IDE, for example, they just don't do so good with other languages. They don't have the tools integrated for the other languages. Although I do use Wing for when I need to do more debugging than I can easily do with just Emacs.
A nice feature of TextMate in particular is that it does have support for a number of different languages. So
yeah, that's a big plus.
Sort of a Swiss Army knife feel to it.
Yep, agreed. Okay. What about the future? I guess there's been a real trend. Of course, there's a lot of web programming going on, and you can create simple GUIs on the web, but not the kind of really powerful GUIs that we're accustomed to on the desktop. Robin, do you, again, this is kind of a trick question, but I mean, do you want to make yourself look foolish by predicting the next 5 years or 10 years? will there ever be any cross-pollination between desktop GUI programming and
yeah.
web?
Yeah, I think we're seeing some of that already. For example, with some of the so-called Ajax apps or Web 2.0 apps. Several years ago, I kind of had an idea that I never really had time to work on, and that was to make a deployable platform using WXPython that could essentially be a thick client, where you'd still have a centralized application server, but have on your client side, you'd have the ability to do all the things you could do in a rich desktop GUI. And make it standardized so that a standard interface between the client side and the server side, so that you could do all those things either driven from the client side or the server side. But I think we're starting to see that more with Ajax types applications coming from the browser, and the browsers themselves are becoming thicker with more capabilities. And a lot of those capabilities have been there for a long time, but people are just now starting to figure out how to use them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The toolkits for what the basic idea behind Ajax, which is that you make this asynchronous JavaScript call behind the scenes to the server, has been around really for a long time before somebody put a name to it and people started building tools around it.
Right.
I think email was the first application that people sort of looked at on the web and went, wow, this does not feel like a web application. And right after that, someone coined the word Ajax, and after that, people started building toolkits for it, which I think was really important. It will continue to be really important in terms of making it easier and easier to build one of these things, because you don't get a whole lot of support from the browser.
Right.
You don't get a whole. I mean, JavaScript's a nice language, but very few people right now sort of speak JavaScript as their primary language, and there isn't a whole lot of editor support and things like that. So it's a question of the tools that have come out that and libraries on top of JavaScript and things like Google Web Toolkit and Rails and things like that that are trying to make it easy to build that kind of stuff. And so I think we're just going to see more of that. You know, the browser tools are going to get richer and richer. You're going to see there's a... I think that one of the things you're going to see right now more of are things that look like desktop apps but are basically specialized browsers.
Right.
So one of the ones I'm thinking of is the 37 Signals has this sort of web chat app called Campfire, and someone came out with something called, I think, Pyro, which is basically, it's really a web browser, but it's a web browser specifically aimed at, you know, running this one web app.
I see.
So, you know, it's optimized. It looks like a desktop application, but functionally it's basically a browser with some nice special features because it knows you're going to this web app. I think that's one place where there's going to be some convergence that you're going to see. As you're seeing, you're going to see thicker and thicker browser clients and thinner desktop clients, and, you know, it's going to get harder and harder to tell the difference.
Right, right. Interesting. And, of course, then you've got all the handhelds and things like that proliferating. Is there, Robin, do you know if there's any plans in the future for WXPython to be usable on smaller devices?
It's been done already.
Okay.
It's not really widely used. WX widgets can be compiled for Windows CE.
Right.
And there was also some work at one point in time to make a port for Palm OS. And then there's also some people that have done the work to make WX Python run on Windows CE, although it they had to do a lot of changes and they didn't keep them up to date, and so other people are looking at and bringing those up to date now.
Interesting, yeah. I have a Sharp Zorus, so I don't think there's a distribution for that, but Python runs on it quite well, so it could be...
With that one, it's Linux-based, and so
yes,
it'll just be a matter of building with a cross-compiler on a Linux desktop.
I'm pretty sure I remember someone getting Squeak Smalltalk to work on that platform.
Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure, I can attest that I myself have used WXPython successfully on various Linux flavors and on the Mac. The Mac is my primary machine at home these days, and I now have an Intel Mac, so it works fine on the Intel Mac. It works fine on the old PowerPC Macs, and I use it on Windows at work. So I haven't had any problems. It probably... several years ago, I had a few installation problems on the Mac, but that was probably more my fault than anyone else. But basically, it works flawlessly on all three of those major platforms. So that makes it that means a lot, I think.
It really does.
Yeah.
And I keep sometimes have to keep reminding myself, you know, how big of a bonus that is that. You know, I can move my programs across platforms and with sometimes needing minor tweaks here and there, but for the most part, just working.
Right. And I do believe I really believe that your book, which, I don't know, it came out, what, three months ago, maybe?
March.
Has it been that long? But
it has.
I believe that it's really the way to go. I mean, for anybody who wants to learn WXPython, you know, it's obviously the book of choice. And even though there's a lot of information on the web, I always find that having a book is a real plus because I take it with me on business trips and I can read it at my leisure or, you know, just carry it around the house. Or I can always find things quicker, too.
Also available in convenient PDF format.
I forgot about that. It's an interesting point.
Not searching.
And you'll probably update it in the future with a, you know, with an updated version someday. So, because it'll be the standard reference book. And I know you want to put in more time on a book. That's a joke. Okay. Well, let's see. I think I've asked most of the questions I had in mind. I really, really appreciate you all. You've been very patient. I had some technical difficulties behind the scenes that the audience, of course, doesn't know about. But you all have been very patient, and that's very much appreciated. But before we go, what did I forget to ask? Is there... I'll turn to you first, Noel. Is there anything you'd like to say to the people who listen to this podcast?
I wanted to say that, first of all, that Robin and I really appreciate the response that the book has gotten. You know, when you work on something for this long, eventually you kind of lose the ability to tell whether it's any good or not. And it's been very gratifying to have people, you know, buy it and come back and say, yeah, it is pretty good. And so that's been very gratifying to see positive response, positive reviews. We're just, you know, very glad that people have been able to take it and get use out of it. So that's really that's been great. And
it's a great community, isn't it?
It's very good.
Definitely, you know, a lot of people are you know, help each other, and that's really nice to see.
Right.
That was one of the things that drew me to the to the whole Python community up front, certainly.
And I certainly think that, you know, Robin's presence on Robin's, you know, almost ubiquitous presence on the mailing list has a lot to do with setting a tone there.
Well, you can't ask for better than having the creator of the toolkit actually be there answering questions sometimes online, and yeah, that's tremendous. Robin, what are your thoughts? Anything that you'd like to say that I didn't ask, or anything of that sort?
You know, thank you for the opportunity to talk about it. It's been enjoyable, and I hope that you know, we'll be able to have some of the listeners you know, take a greater interest in the community and perhaps even contributing some of their own little pet projects to WX Python.
Yeah, and people should feel free to. Not, in addition to the WX Python mailing list, Manning maintains a mailing list for the book, which people have been catching errata on, and Robin and I also monitor that. Again, mostly Robin with the more technical questions, but we're both there. And we occasionally get emails from Manning saying that somebody's had a question out there for, you know, 2 hours and nobody's answered it yet. So could we please?
Okay, well that's a real benefit.
Yeah, it's actually well anyway. And I wanted to. Not going to go there. I also wanted to say that, like I said, I have this article, WX World, coming out on IBM DeveloperWorks site sometime soon.
Actually, I've already seen it there, so I think it's
there.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, it's there.
You know what? I'll check it out, and I'll put the URL to it in my show notes on my website.
They're not very good about notifying me about that. And I actually also have a series coming up on Google Web Toolkit, which should start showing up in about a month.
Right.
It's going to be a four-part series on that. And also, just a quick, really shameless plug, I also did just recently start a blog to write about programming and software stuff at things that I wouldn't normally get commissioned to write articles for or books about, and that is at 10printhello.blogspot.com. So numeral 10printhello.blogspot.com. If people want to come over there and, you know, listen to me rant about stuff, that's great.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that also.
I think Robin already has been there.
Yep, I commented on one of them.
Yeah.
Do you have a URL you want? If you have any more URLs, just send them to me in email, and I'll put them in the show notes. But I don't know if you have one, Robin. That,
no, I've something I've always been thinking I should do someday, but.
Well, I think you're doing enough.
Yeah. The WX Python wiki would be a good URL to have. So it's wiki.wxpython.org.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on there that was very helpful to me. Now that you mention it, I recall using that.
Me too.
And
like most wikis, it's kind of hit and miss, but there's a lot of good stuff in there.
I think the whole Python community owes both of you you know, a debt of gratitude, and in particular, Robin, with all the work you put into WX Python, it's amazing, the open source community, and that you have people contributing such useful large bodies of code like WX Python, and it's I just find it inspiring, and it's a model for the future of how communities can work and society can be improved.
I'd really like to thank the Open Source Applications Foundation for sponsoring my work on this. It's, you know, they've really made it possible for the last several years for me to, you know, do so much more than I was doing before.
Right.
It's been really great for the community and been great for WX Python and really good for me as well.
Right. Good people there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess with that, I will probably sign off, and hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime. And
sure.
I really recommend everybody check out WX Python and the book WX Python in Action by Manning. So this has been an interview with Robin Dunn, the creator of WX Python, and Noel Rappin, the authors of the book. So for now, that's your host, Ron Stevens, with Python 411, computer